Psalm 46. I think this is specifically relevant to the situation in Hezekiah's time when the Assyrians had surrounded the city of Jerusalem, they'd taken the rest of Judah, and it looked like Jerusalem likewise would fall, like Lachish and the other cities of Judah had all fallen. And I think this is a prayer not particularly by Hezekiah, but by a faithful individual, possibly the prophet Isaiah, who really believed that the promised deliverance would come. So verse 1, God is our refuge and strength. They didn't have anything else to trust in. A very present help in trouble. Well, Isaiah had prayed in Isaiah 33, may you be their arm every morning, our salvation also in the time of trouble. May you be our salvation in the time of trouble. And now he says, God is a very present help in time of trouble. So it seems to be saying that the prayer had been answered, or he believed that it would be answered. Verse 2, therefore we won't be afraid though the earth shakes, earth is the word for land, though the land shakes, though the mountains are shaken into the heart of the seas. Well, in Hebrew there is this intensive plural, whereby the plural is used sometimes to mean one great thing. So, the mountains can refer to the one great mountain, and it would be Mount Zion that is in view. So, even though the great mountain, Zion, the temple mountain, is thrown into the heart of the seas, I think he's saying even if we lose this, and sure, the Assyrians do take the temple mount, we will not be afraid. Though the waters roar and are troubled, though the mountains, the great mountain, trembles with the swelling of the waters, well, the waters of the Gentile nations. And he's saying, well, even if we shake like this and the seas are, as it were, around us, the great mountain of Zion, we still will trust in God, even in defeat. And this is the powerful thing, that even in times of apparent defeat, you know, you've been praying for somebody to overcome cancer, but they die from it, you do not lose your faith, but you accept that there is a bigger picture with God. There is a river, he says, the streams of which make the city of God glad. So he's saying, yeah, these Gentile nations like the seas, the oceans are all around us. We're like a man who's got the water right up to his neck, as Isaiah elsewhere says. But in contrast to them, there's a little river, there's a little stream which makes the city of God glad. Now this may be a reference to how Hezekiah had built a conduit that brought a trickle of water into Zion from the Gihon. And that's because Jerusalem had no natural water supply, and the city, of course, was glad because of that. And he sees in that stream the fragile but very small and yet significant help of God. The holy place of the tents of the Most High. Well, all around Jerusalem were the tents of the Assyrian army. But he sees by faith that there's another army of angels that are there. God is in her midst, verse 5, she shall not be moved. Well, he believes then that finally God will not allow Zion to be moved, even though he says perhaps the great mountain of Zion will be thrown into the heart of the seas, the Gentile nations, yet he says ultimately she will not be moved. As if, you know, there can be defeat, there can be loss, there can be death in this life, but that is not the end. Because ultimately Jesus will return and there will be the resurrection of the dead, when at last we shall eternally be established. Verse 6, the nations raged and the kingdoms were moved. Well, in verse 2 and 3, he says the waters rage and they are roaring and troubling and trembling. Well, clearly those waters then represent the nations. But he lifted up his voice and the earth melted. And I think this is a reference to Isaiah's word of prophecy that it will be okay. Yahweh of armies is with us, and the armies are the armies of angels. And of course, it was just one of them who went out and slew 185,000 of the Assyrian soldiers, and they all ran away. Come, verse 8, see the works of Yahweh, what desolations he has made in the land. Well, I think the idea is that after the Assyrians were destroyed, there should be an invitation to the surrounding nations to come and see what he had done. Verse 9, he makes wars cease to the end of the land, the earth, I take it, the Eretz, the land promised to Abraham. He breaks the bow, he shatters the spear, he burns the chariots in the fire. Well, if you ask, well, how did the angel kill 185,000? God makes his angels a flame of fire, Psalm 104 says. So I wondered if, in fact, there were bolts of fire used by the one angel that destroyed their chariots. Verse 10, be still, and know that I am God, and I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth and the land. So the idea is, you don't need to worry, you don't need to go out and fight these people, you can't win anyway, but just be still and know that I am God and I ultimately will rule among the nations. So that's why they were told when Rabshakeh is bullying them with his words, don't answer him a word. In other words, follow this advice, be still and know that I am God. Well, the idea was that after the Assyrian invasion was destroyed, the nations around would be invited to come and see what God has done, and God would be exalted in the Eretz, in the land promised to Abraham. But that potential was dropped by Hezekiah. He let the ball drop. Because what does he do? Sure, the nations come, and he shows off to them all his wealth. They will come and give him presents, and he shows that off. And when the ambassadors from Babylon come, we're told his heart was lifted up. His heart was exalted. But here God says, I will be exalted among the nations. But the record says that Hezekiah's heart was exalted. So he lets the baton drop. And when he's told he's going to die, and okay, he prays, and God says, all right, fair enough, I'll give you another 15 years. He basically shrugs and says, oh, that's pretty cool. There shall be peace and truth in my days. I got 15 years. That's good. And he raises this awful son, Manasseh. It was one of the worst kings of Judah. And you know, God says to Hezekiah, because you so loved the ambassadors of Babylon, your descendants are going to go into captivity in Babylon. And so often it happens that potentials are set up in human life. In our lives, you see it in the lives of others, what could have been, and yet we waste them. We drop the baton. And this must be so tragic to be God, to see all the possible futures. And God knows all possible futures. He has a boundless function in that sense, in terms of being able to foresee things, like a chess computer that can see every possible combination of moves that the human player might make. Well, God, even more so than that, can see absolutely with the power of boundless function, he can see absolutely all possible futures. Jesus had some insight into that when he says to the Jews of his day, if what I've done here, my miracles, have been done in Sodom, they would have repented long ago. He knew what would have happened if he had been in Sodom and had done the miracles that he did. And so he perceives this, and God far more so. And this is a tragedy. And I think positively, though, God must be pleased and delighted when people like you and me, in all our weakness, do say yes to him. And we do try to go the way of the Spirit, and we try to follow up those potentials that he gives us. But once you get into that, then you let God, through his Spirit, take a total grip on your life. And your life is not yours. And you go where you are led. If you pray every day to meet people who will respond to the gospel, you will be answered in the end. And he baptized this one, and then, oh, you're led to another one. And, oh, they lead you to another one. And so it may also be in matters other than missionary work or the work of witness, wherever we are, all sorts of things, helping people. You really help that sister to quit alcoholism, and that introduces you to some of her mates and other people struggling with this, and they win. And of course, the amount of time they're spending on this is huge. Yeah, the number of communications, the hours spent communicating, meeting, drinking coffee together, and going through it all, is huge. But okay, if you give your heart, if you sell your soul to God's work, he will lead you from one thing to another. And this is the greatest way to live. And ultimately, the potential is that you and I shall be in God's kingdom. And yeah, as I say, you can be like Hezekiah and be a satisficer and say, well, I've got a bit of life left. Yeah, I'm just going to enjoy myself, do my thing. No, and then it's all wasted. It's all wasted by just looking at the immediate, by petty materialism, like with him. Or, you know, I got all these presents. Look at my gold and silver. Look at the house of my treasures. Boasting, showing off, worried about image, and the image you cut with people on the basis of materialism. So much wasted because of petty materialism.